Hello, welcome to Universal Love. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And this is Detective David Love.
Welcome to our show. Today we're very happy to have
Nancy McGonigal, with the CEO of the Monroe Institute, with us today. Thank you for coming, Nancy. We're so excited to have you on our show today.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure. It's an honor to be here with you all. Your evening, my morning.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Different parts of the world.
Indeed.
The Monroe Institute, famous, famous, famous place.
This is, we've already, you know, had a conversation with you once by phone just to get to know each other, and I told you that your stepfather is Robert Monroe, who wrote Journeys Out of the Body, Fire Journeys, The Ultimate Journey, which are books I read when I was really young, and life-changing for me, absolutely life-changing, and the foundation of most of my beliefs about the universe and about reality. And just those books blew my mind about astral projection, and a lot of our listeners know that I've talked about my own out-of-body experiences that I've had. So this is all about astral projection. It's about out-of-body experiences, all kinds of interesting things. That
it's mostly about paranormal experiences that individuals can have.
Paranormal experiences. I didn't hear the last part.
What individuals can have
out-of-body experiences, UBIs.
Yeah, people have. Are you talking about what people have when they come here? Is that what you're talking about, Marna?
The books that David's referring to.
Okay.
The focus of the institute. Would you say it's about unusual paranormal experiences that an individual can have?
Actually not. It's not about the paranormal experiences, but it is about people getting in touch with understanding more of what they really are. And in learning more about consciousness, there are some extraordinary experiences that take place, but I'd like to think they're not necessarily paranormal. You know, it scares people off. Some people.
True, it is a scary word.
But I guess outside of the normal experiences.
Yeah. Right. And so if we can make these extraordinary states of consciousness normal, to make them easily accessible so people can understand more of what they really are and bring it to their lives, which enhances lives a lot, you see, this is what we try to do here through our experiential program. So yes, some people do have paranormal experiences, but I would say more, they go into such depth inside themselves that they end up experiencing parts of themselves they never knew existed. Is that paranormal? Perhaps. But it's not like we have ashtrays flying around the room, poltergeist, and that kind of paranormal activity. But yes, some people have out-of-bodies. That is not our sole focus, though.
I've had those experiences, at least three of them very vividly, where I woke up from taking a nap, and I'm standing there looking at my body, laying asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
One of my experiences, there were creatures, they were vivid, it was like physical reality, except I realized it was not. And I still, to this day, I don't know what to make of these experiences.
Right.
I've had. But, you know, I sort of promote that I study mysticism and
right.
the study of metaphysics and the study of consciousness, which is very much related to what the Monroe Institute's doing.
Right.
Work.
Exactly.
So I can definitely relate to, you know, what your work and your stepfather, Robert Monroe's writings, and also Joseph McGonigal. Stargate. I have to mention that.
We'd like to talk about that more in depth afterwards. So,
sure.
Can I just ask? So, your stepfather, he wrote the books. He had the experiences first, wrote the books, and then created the institute.
He wrote the. I'm sorry, you're cutting in on me. I think the mic must be closer to David. He wrote the books.
So I'm just Robert Monroe.
Yes.
I'm assuming that your stepfather had these experiences, these unusual experiences, and then wrote the book and then founded the institute.
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about how it started?
Sure, of course. Bob was a very curious man, and of course he thought he was losing his mind mm-hmm. when he started having these out-of-body experiences. I assume, David, when you started having it happen, that's why you liked his book so much. It's like, oh good, I'm not the only one having this kind of odd.
Freaky.
So in keeping the notes, his journal on his experiences, his out-of-body experiences, and going into these very different types of realities, he was thinking, gosh, wouldn't it be interesting if I could find other people who could also do this? He was asked to give a training program at Esalen. You probably have heard of Esalen. It's out in California here. It's where they give a lot of programs from very big array of institutions. And he took our program there, which at that time people just used it. They wanted to go out of body. That's all they cared about. And that's how it started. And then after this program took place, which was very successful, this is in 1973. Mm-hmm. Then after that, more and more people said, "Ooh, we want your program. Please give us your program." And so what he established was what is now called the Gateway.
The Gateway.
Voyage program. And this, Bob believed that focused consciousness could give us any of the answers to anything we wanted. And so teaching people how to get into different states of consciousness, everything from just being very relaxed, actually where you put your body to sleep, but you keep your mind awake and alert, to going out to these other realities, such as you have experienced, David, which are kind of outside of time, space, physical matter reality.
Non-reality, non-ordinary reality.
There you go, non-ordinary, yes, exactly, non-ordinary reality. Or what? And you're right, Lana, some people might call that a paranormal kind of experience because it's beyond the normal.
Beyond normal or super normal, sure.
And Nancy, would I be right in, I mean, I know the Monroe Institute is world famous, would I be right in saying that it was the first and possibly even still the only institute that actually focuses on these unusual states of consciousness in a scientific way? And
I mean, in the way that you do it, I believe that's true.
Right, in the way we do it, right. That the difference between us and many other places is Bob took a very scientific approach to this whole thing. And he established this audio technology called HemiSync, short for etheric synchronization, to help guide people, to help the brain, it's like brain entrainment, to get into these various deep states of consciousness. So since this has been going on since the early 70s, we're one of the first. I think there are other training systems, like you have Silva Mind Control, for example, that was way back then. Right. But the difference is, again, we took more of a scientific approach. And Bob was always interested in researching more about consciousness, even though the research is a little bit different from the normal research. He was just curious about what happens out there. What can we do with this thing called an out-of-body experience? What is this energy we all speak of, this vital energy?
He sounds like he's got a perfect combination of the spiritual and the scientific, the both brains very much developed.
And you know what's interesting, though? He didn't want to use the word spiritual. No? He really was like this.
Bob was a businessman, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I feel bad. I was a Rosicrucian for a long time, and I understand that, you know, I worked primarily in the court system, and at that time in Boston, you just didn't profess that, you wouldn't talk about your beliefs like that, beliefs in things that are supernatural, because your credibility was at stake as a professional. You know? So
that must have been tricky for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine back then having to deal with, you know, these experiences. Anyone, read these books. They're amazing.
He actually was the person who started the first television cable company in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's the nearest town to us. And also then he established another one. He was always interested in communications. He had been the vice president of RKO, a very huge, they did radio and television way back when. And that was his background. So he was very much, and he was charismatic. So here he had the radio voice. He had the interest in audio. He was very fascinated by sleep learning. What could we do? And so he started using these sounds. So I was kind of brought up on these sounds by the time I was 14 years old.
How old was he when he had his first out-of-body experience?
How old was I or he?
No, it was Robert.
It was 1958, so, and he was born in 1915. He would have been, what, 43?
Okay.
43 years old. And you see, he was this drinking guy and everything else. After this started, he couldn't have his 2-martini lunch anymore, you see. Made him sick. Now, he did love a good hamburger. He was not a vegetarian. Okay. He wasn't pure kind of, but no alcohol. And he felt strongly about always being in control instead of having an outside substance, drugs, alcohol, and so forth, being in control. Because then you don't have control over that. How do you focus your consciousness if your brain is whacked out on chemicals?
Well, that's a good point. I can accept that. Yeah. You know, the things that he describes in his book and some of the beings that he describes, I can validate this because I have seen these for myself, similar, maybe not similar to what he's seen, but, you know, and I thought I was going crazy 15 years ago when I saw some of these things, and I asked a doctor about them. I asked a psychiatrist, actually, and the psychiatrist said, I've got to ask my senior psychiatrist of this place, because I don't know what to make of it. And the senior psychiatrist said, and he came back to me and said, no, they're called hypnagogic images or hypnagogic hallucinations. And he said, they're very normal between sleeping and waking state, and people see monsters sometimes.
Or spiders crawling up the wall.
Or whatever. And it just didn't seem to satisfy me because I said, well, what is a hypnagogic image? That's a label. That's giving this image that I saw. Does that mean it's real or not real? What is this? And I was confused for the longest time because I had read these books by Robert Monroe. I had heard other stories when the internet first came out and people started describing this. And I'd heard about it from my friends. And I said, am I crazy? Were these things real? Or, you know, what is a hypnagogic image? That doesn't mean anything to me. You being a medical doctor.
Well, I think what you describe and I think the experiences in the book are very, very different. I mean, the hypnagogic experiences, very often people, and I've actually seen spider crawling up the wall when you're, if you're, just waking up, that often happens. And
sure.
I would understand that by, just a part of the brain, sort of the visual cortex perhaps going off just like that.
But this UBI is this non-ordinary reality is very,
right.
very different.
Yes.
And it's very unusual and I'm very unfamiliar to most people. And
Nancy, can I ask, have you had many of these experiences yourself?
Yes.
It runs in a family a bit?
Well, I've had out-of-body experiences you're talking about, yes, indeed. And also some of the more unusual types of things. But you see, it's because it was permitted in my family. My mother was pretty much of a Christian mystic, I would call her.
Okay.
And my father, Bud Honeycutt, was a Marine Corps officer, a good, strong Methodist, you see. So I grew up in a religious, but also open to weird stuff like extraterrestrials and UFOs and out-of-bodies and so forth. So I was very fortunate that you weren't deemed crazy if you had such unusual
experience.
Yeah. So, I consider myself very, very lucky to have grown up. So, yeah, therefore, many different types of experiences. But what you do learn is to not talk about it so much when you're in the 8th grade or 9th grade or 10th grade. This is long before the term out of body became so popular. And I think Bob's first book, Journeys Out of Body, is one reason it is so popular. You know, that's used a lot more now than astral projections. So.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think he really popularized it and revolutionized it and opened the door to research and acceptance.
Is it actually the same thing? I think astral projection was something that happened in your dreams.
Same thing.
It's synonymous, like private investigator, private detective. I think it's fairly the same.
Right, exactly.
But I'm assuming that you can have these out-of-body experiences either in a conscious state or in a waking state or in a dream state.
Right, either way. I don't have that kind of control, by the way, but one can have it, either consciously or yes. after they've gone to sleep. Mine was usually after I'd gone to sleep is usually when I had mine.
Oh, okay. And are they the same as having dreams? Like, would you say...
That's lucid dreaming, I think.
No, but apart from lucid, if we get on to lucid dreaming later, but dreams, I believe that some people believe that in any dreams, and some perhaps... tribal people believe that whenever you dream, you actually do go outside the body.
I don't think they're identical. I think there's some dreams which are just like neural discharge or you're processing stuff. There's a lot of psychological stuff.
Yes.
Obviously, or maybe the firing off of things, your body doing whatever it does in REM sleep. That's one thing. An out of body to me is different from a normal dream.
So how can you tell? That's that.
I think there are certain people who have flying dreams, which may in fact be out of body. You know, there seems to be a distinct difference. There's more of a conscious element in the out of body.
That's lucid dreaming, isn't it? With the conscious, when you can consciously.
Well, that's being aware that you're dreaming.
Yes.
Lucid dreaming is that you know what it, you're aware that you're asleep, you're aware that you're dreaming, and you can actually control the dream.
What I can say about a classic out of body experience is that you'll see your physical body, and you'll
That's me.
That's me, and I'm in my astral body, and your astral body is. It's the same as your physical body almost. I mean, with the limited experience I had, I said, I'm still me. It was a very strange separation, you know, and it's so quick. It was so quick. You don't often know what to make of it. But what's interesting, what you said and what you talk about with the Moreau Institute's work is that you really, what this led to with the books that I read and my experiences is it led me to question reality and question myself and study myself, like you said, and expand my own thinking and expand my universe and explore myself and explore my thoughts and feelings and explore consciousness and open myself up to new ideas and learn and grow and I think this is what this is really all about. It's really about our spiritual evolution and growth, and it's really it leads you in that direction, and it's really, really life-changing and exciting.
Well, Bob was real big on getting beyond belief systems.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Held us back so very much.
Limited beliefs.
So what he said is, what you have to do is get into your no system, K-N-O-W.
Non-belief.
And get beyond the beliefs, which he also felt, and he's very right, in so many cases, they are beliefs, are our cherished illusions.
Agreed. I think it's all an illusion. I think everything is an illusion almost. Not a hallucination, but an illusion. An illusion is a distraction because reality is so much stranger than life. And people just have no idea. And I post about this all the time, and I say, you really need to open up your mind and let go of your beliefs. You need to let go of life because we really don't understand how different things are, and I still don't myself. I realize I know nothing. We really limit ourselves.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
In terms of the illusions, I guess you're talking about the illusion of not only that this is the only reality, but also the illusion that we only exist in our body and that our consciousness is here rather than out there. Is that what you're...
Well, that we are limited to physical matter reality would be one illusion, if you will. And I think what we do here at our programs, which is teaching people to experience, to know that they are more than their physical bodies, helps break apart a lot of illusions, most particularly perhaps those associated with the fear of death.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
If you know you are more than your physical body, that's a real big help.
That is a huge...
What do I do, you know, if I'm no longer in this?
Yes.
Do I still exist?
It's very freeing.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Very freeing.
So that would be one of the biggest illusions, is that we are limited by physical matter reality, or that's all there is.
I agree. Yeah. I think the most useful belief I ever gained for myself or insight was the lie of death, the eternal soul, the immortal soul, and that the life after life, which is part of our mission is
to teach people about that. We have this. With Universal Soul Love, we've got soul, S-O-U-L, we've got four principles. S for sacredness of feminine and masculine coming together. Then we have O, oneness consciousness, that we are all really one. U for unveiling of the true self. And L is life after life. So we do believe it's important, just like the Munro Institute, to actually teach people about this.
I actually, because of Robert's books and the Munro Institute, I went on to volunteer and work in hospice and really experience that and take that on. And then I went on, I was led to the spiritualist church, and I was led to spiritualist mediums, and I was floored by all of my experiences, and this idea of life beyond life became beliefs, like you said, beliefs, I don't believe beliefs are important, but useful beliefs I think are good. And a useful belief for me was this idea of the immortal soul and eternal life, that mm-hmm. it's just an illusion, and that was just central to my belief system.
Right.
My useful right. belief system. So I love your work, and I admire you so much for what you're doing and everyone in the Institute, and I thank you so much for it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel really honored to be back here directing the Institute again. You know, I helped start the place back in the 70s with Bob and a few others, and then went away for a while, got into publishing, came back, and was its director between 1983 and 1991. Mm-hmm. And then I left again and was gone for 23 years doing astrology, because that's my passion, is I'm an astrologer, and working with my husband, Joe McMonagall, in our company, Intuitive Intelligence Applications, where I would be the interface with clients. He is known as probably being the best remote viewer on the planet. The difference between remote viewing and being psychic is remote viewing is being psychic under very strict scientific protocols.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about remote viewing?
Sure. So with the remote viewing, for example, the difference between that and, let's say, just regular psychic activity. With psychic activity, I could say, oh, tell me about my Aunt Mary. But with remote viewing, you'd write down Aunt Mary on a piece of paper, put it inside an envelope, seal the envelope, give and we call that the target. And let's say I would give it today's date, so it would be 8/25/15, and I would give the sealed envelope to Joe and say, describe the target and tell me where the target's location is. Now, the target could be this pen. It could be anything in the whole world. So if he starts to describe a woman, let's say, that looks like my Aunt Mary, then I know he's on target, right? And then he would give me, let's say, and the location of this, I'm picking up a desert scene, and it feels like it's in the southwest of the United States, blah, blah, blah. So remote viewing is psychic activity, but again, in a very controlled situation, double blind. I didn't know where my aunt, well, actually double blind would be if I didn't even know Aunt Mary was in the envelope, mm-hmm. written in the envelope. Okay. So, and by the way, I should tell you, I'm having a little note that my internet connection is a bit unstable. We do live in the middle of the country here. We're in a gorgeous part of Virginia, mm-hmm. and the price we pay is unfortunately, technology sometimes breaks down. So if you lose me, that's why. There might be a cloud in the sky.
Okay.
So with remote viewing, we actually have a remote viewing program here at the Institute.
Yes, that's what they do.
Oh, okay, because it was originally used by the military, wasn't it?
Well, it was used by the military. There was this project called the Stargate Project. That was one of its many names.
Which I mentioned in my book, The First Truth. I mentioned your husband in my book.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so he was actually a remote viewer. 001, 001.
He's famous, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like a household name in the spiritual community.
Right, wow.
Yeah. Listeners will know.
So, So anyway, the Army, of course, used it for applications, like helping identify who the hostages in Iran were back in, I guess that was, what, 78, 79, around then, I think, and where they were, and to use it in application-based things. And so since then, of course, now Joe's been very much involved in the research of remote viewing with Dr. Edwin May, who has the Laboratories for Fundamental Research out in California. They're still working. How does this work? Well, guess what? We still don't know. But maybe getting a little bit closer, there seems to be something about entropy involved that may heighten the accuracy of some remote viewers.
Can I ask you, how accurate is it known to be?
It depends on the person.
The best one, wasn't he?
He had a very high accuracy rate. They define accuracy also in different ways. So, you know, if you're talking to a psychic, a regular psychic, having a psychic reading, let's say, that person may tell you 100,000 words of things.
Yes.
And out of that, maybe 200 would be correct.
Yes.
So there is, looking at that, like, oh, well, that person was quite correct, but there was all this other stuff they said that wasn't. With remote viewing, everything that's said gets weighted. Well, is that correct, not correct? Well, Joe was running, I'm going to say it was about 86%.
Oh, my goodness.
This is embarrassing. I can't remember specifically which measure we were looking at of, or they were looking at it, of his correctness. But he is very, very good.
I have to ask you, Nancy, if you ever lose things around the house, like keys or other things, he must come in very handy.
That's so cute. You know, when the word got out, the CIA had remote viewers and everything, and we had all these people coming, and said, what's it like living with such a person? And I said, well, you know, it'd be great if we could find the car keys, because it doesn't quite work that way, unfortunately.
Right.
I don't have that problem.
But not that he can, but usually not.
Yeah.
Remember, it's double blind. If I say, where are the keys? Boom, I've already destroyed the thing. So yes, it's a fascinating thing, and also because, again, it's not just about stuff here in physical matter reality. Mm-hmm. Joe, and he talks about this in his books as well, when they're going out and exploring other places that are beyond Earth, let's say. Like Mars was one of his tasks. The past, the present, the future. Time doesn't make any difference. So you can do remote viewing in any of these.
Wow, I actually didn't realize that you could remote view on another planet. That's quite remote.
No, not just a
remote.
You can go into dimensions, I mean, beyond anything anyone could ever.
Okay, so then how
beyond
does,
imagination.
So my question then, is that the same as like a out-of-body experience, the remote viewing? Is that the process similar?
It's different in that when you're out of body, it's a distinct sense that you know your body is over here, but you are, there's a dissociative element to it. You are not in your body. With remote viewing, you're very much present, you see. Now, you can still be out in these other deep, deep states where you're getting this information. But
presumably your consciousness,
not apart from your body to do it.
But presumably your consciousness goes beyond your brain.
Oh, well, I would suggest that there are two different things, you see. The brain acting more like an interface device, and consciousness or spirit or however you want to define it, yes, do we even say elsewhere? Because we're not talking about time-space. So it just is, right?
Consciousness is such an elusive thing. We don't even know where consciousness exists. In my mind, consciousness exists everywhere, and our consciousness exists everywhere.
I agree.
Some people say it's in the brain. Some people say it's in the body. I say our consciousness is connected to all things. But anyhow, that's what we're getting
into.
Metaphysical philosophy.
I know that a lot of thinkers in the area of consciousness will actually say that, contrary to what scientists and doctors believe, that consciousness doesn't reside in the brain. The brain is more like a receptacle,
processing unit.
Yes, or an antenna. Would that be
right?
Right.
That's why I said like an interface device with something, so that that then we can translate in whatever the information is that we're getting.
That's our interpretive unit.
That's absolutely amazing. Can I ask also, the idea of, like, one of the things that we talk about is oneness consciousness, and I know that Carl Jung, for instance, talked about the collective unconscious, that really, in essence, our consciousness or our unconsciousness is all almost one, and the non-dualistic theory would have that being individual is an illusion. So I guess my next question is, is it possible to get into someone else's body or someone else's mind in this process?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Lana, and it tickles me because, again, remember, we're out here in the country, right? So we have a lot of salt of the earth people, good country folks around here, and the rumor used to be that we would take brains and switch one brain to another. Number one. Or number two, that we would take souls and switch one soul from one body to the other. So let me say immediately, we don't do that, of course. And that wasn't your question, though. Your question was, is it possible that somebody could, let's say, get into someone else's body?
Well, just, you know, almost like remote viewing, because, you know, which then leads to the whole question of what reincarnation is.
Well, I think it's possible to perceive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of these things you can learn how to do. You can perceive what is going on with the other person with their permission. I'm real big on non-invasive.
That's a good policy.
But to inhabit their body, I would like to think that nobody we know would do that.
Yes. So, well, you know, I remember reading in Robert's book how he actually somehow got his consciousness into a fish. In one of the books, he was being chased by a bigger fish. And as he leapt up into the air, one of the bigger fish was about to eat him in the fish's body or something, and he jumped out, and I don't know.
But I imagine something like this would have wonderful applications in empathy, for instance. I mean, if you could get you know, a segment of the population to understand what it might be like to be another human or another animal, empathy might be able to be enhanced. Mm. So could you tell us what sort of programs do you offer people? Yeah. And how do people get in touch with you?
Yes.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice question to
that
ask.
Is.
We have a number of different kinds of programs, everything from our beginning, as I mentioned earlier, program The Gateway Voyage, which teaches people how to get into these deeper and deeper and more expanded states of consciousness. Then from there, we have a program called the Guidelines Program, getting in touch with your guides, or however you want to put it, your angels, or as Bob used to call it, ISH, Inner Self Helper. He loved acronyms. Oh, my goodness. And so by whatever words, getting guidance from a greater source, if I may put it that way. Mm-hmm. We have a program called MC Squared, which is about psychokinesis, manifestation.
Okay.
You know, so you see these people running around bending their spoons, lighting light bulbs, and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. How can you manifest what it is you want in life? And what are we talking again? Focused consciousness, using this energy.
That sounds like law of attraction as well.
It sounds like what?
It sounds like that's got elements of law of attraction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And the out-of-body program we have, a medical intuition program as well. We have a program called Exploration 27, where you're talking about going out.
I've heard of that.
Way on into other realities.
I'm coming over to Virginia. You know, this sounds so good.
I want to say, just to advocate for what you're doing. As a private detective, my most useful skill was my higher senses, my awareness, my intuition, which I developed, you know, doing criminal defense and all the work that I did in investigations over more than 20 years. My most reliable skill, that kept me from danger and kept me from was ability to rely on my own senses and just learn to read people very quickly, learn to read their motives and do it within 10 seconds, without them even speaking to me, to sense their energy, their body language, their expressions, their movements, their energy, their emotional content, everything about them, it's communicated to you, and you learn that. And when you do, you learn to look deeper inside a person. You learn to understand what makes them tick. And when you get beyond right. that, you practice that more and more. You learn to read rooms, the energy of rooms, and you learn to sense things that you normally wouldn't, because you develop those higher senses.
So these are things that our culture actually devalues, doesn't it? These sensations.
Well, it has very much. Little by little, I think we're making some headway, which is what we're about. We would really like, the way we put it in our vision statement is the awakening of humanity. Mm-hmm. Not that everybody's asleep, but that everybody, we all could stand to be a bit more awake and alert, mm-hmm. aware is the operative term here, again, of what's available to us and how to productively use that in the culture. Mm-hmm. And Bob, his overreaching thing that he wanted to do was just bring something of value to culture. He wanted to help consciousness evolve on the planet, mm-hmm. so that, again, we get back beyond our little belief systems. That's my property. No, it's mine. I have a bigger car than you do, and man, and this is what God really is. No, this is what God really is. And so if we can open up to far greater possibilities mm-hmm. than we ever knew and experience those. So that's what we offer here. Mm-hmm. So there are a whole lot of other different programs. And lucid dreaming, by the way, if you're interested in that. We also have a lucid dreaming program. There are about 17 different programs. If anyone wants to know about them, you just go to monroeinstitute.org, they're all explained. They're usually 5 days, 6 nights, typically, and they stay here. Everyone stays here. People come from all over the world to take these programs. And often with their lives changed.
Really? In what way, could I ask?
Yes, because, again, we do not tell people what to believe. Mm. We have no dogma. Bob was real big on not wanting to do anything with religious overtones, even spiritual overtones, although, of course, it's a spiritual experience, but he didn't want to use those kind of words. So what happens when you come and you take a program here, and things open up. You see life differently. You see your relationships differently.
Oh, really?
You talk about love. You know, we have a Heartline program. More about unconditional love, starting right here. Mm. Opening. How do you connect with others? And how do you realize? You talked about the oneness. I agree with that. That is my belief system as well. We are all one. Mm. And so when you have that kind of experience, or you have an exceptional human experience. They call them EHEs now, by the way.
Oh, okay.
That's the
human experience.
Okay. They used to be called peak experiences.
Okay, right.
That's consciousness, they used to be called. Now they're EHEs. Whatever. So people then realize they get a different overview. They see things so differently about why they've been doing things, what they're doing, who they are, who they're not, you see. And so all this can be used to make your life better, more meaningful, and your relationships deeper and more meaningful as well.
I can attest to that. It actually does make your life more meaningful, and it leads you on the path of self-discovery, really just rediscovering yourself, because we don't know ourselves. And it really is about knowing yourself. And I learned to that inner guide or that inner guru or that higher power or that greater self through the process of awakening. You know, I got that connection as well, that higher connection. I learned more about divine love, higher love, all these things that you're talking about. Everything you're talking about, I actually, Siri just started talking
Sorry.
To me.
Did you hear that?
No, do you have a dog or a cat or something?
No. Siri on David's iPhone. Siri on the iPhone. Every so often, Siri will start speaking spontaneously to David. I don't know, David has this effect on...
my cell phone just sitting on my
my cell phone is just sitting here, and every once in a while, Siri just starts speaking. I don't know why, but
because you were talking about your guides, David.
I just shut Siri off. I think it has something to do with taking down the Matrix, because we're talking about destroying the illusion. Maybe she's part of the illusion.
Maybe she's a guide.
Maybe she's a guide. Maybe I'm misconstruing it. But it's. I'm losing my train of thought on this now. Yeah, that was.
So can I? The website is Munro Institute.
.org.
.org, and that's Munro M. U.
O. N. R. O. No. M. O. N. R. O. E.
Oh, okay. .org.
Yeah. And, Munro Institute.org.
Is it possible to do any of the courses online? For those people.
Actually, yes. We have the Gateway Experience program now offered online, which a lot of people are enjoying because a lot of people can't get here. But we also have programs going on in other parts of the world, England and London and Romania, Spain, Italy, France. Yeah. We used to have them in Australia.
That's a shame.
And I love them back there, yes. But anyway, yes, so we have the Gateway Experience online. You can find out more about that. There's 6 different modules to that. We call them waves 1 through 6. And these are actually products. They're hemi-sync exercises produced by Munro Products. It's like a sister company to us. And Munro Products actually owns the registered trademark to hemi-sync and the Gateway Experience. So we get the product from them. And then we have designed this program, which has been very successful. We just started it this year. So people can do that if they can't get here for the voyage, for example.
And are you offering it? Sorry?
I said we will be having more programs also, of course.
That's fantastic.
So you have many little Munro Institutes all over in other countries, and you used to have one in Australia as well.
No Munro Institutes yet. That's not like a franchise, but we have people who are giving Munro Institute programs.
I see.
I would love to eventually have Munro Institute centers in each of the countries, and we're building towards that.
Really?
Because these people are, we have an outreach program, we have local chapter networks where people of like mind can get together.
Great.
Not only their Munro, but there are other ones as well. Those are also international. And so this outreach program is really important because, again, that's what Bob wanted to do. He wanted to get it out there.
Sure, absolutely.
And this ripple effect, if we're talking about the consciousness evolving, that's all of us.
Everything you're saying is in our mission statement. You know, everything that you're saying is in alignment with our mission and with universal soul love and expanding, awakening humanity, expanding consciousness, raising the vibration of humanity, and you know, the whole, you know, this wonderful conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Really, so interesting. And I'd say that people would have probably the appeal of the Munro Institute is that there's a scientific, I guess, backing or the, you know,
evidence.
That does make us a bit different. Plus, as I right, and we intend to continue our research. We have another technology called SAM, which stands for Spatial Angle Modulation, using a different from the hemi-sync technology, but again, designed to help activate different brain states so that we can then help people get into these expanded states of consciousness.
That's amazing.
So, the technology...
Have you found that the scientific community is becoming more accepting of these phenomena?
Some. Not... Little by little. Just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Un petit peu.
Boy, I can tell you why we have secret societies, and it's not because they're the Illuminati. It's because the people that were in my law, we had police officers, lawyers, diplomats, astrophysicists, university professors, and they didn't want to go out and talk about their beliefs and extraterrestrials and ghosts. It wasn't good for them professionally because they were going to be talked about and ostracized, and, you know, it's a professional career killer. It really is.
That's why we have the local chapter networks, right? So that people can get together. It's safe to talk about stuff like this. But I would also say we have a number of police detectives who come through here.
You know, funny thing, I went to a private Massachusetts private detectives convention years ago, and 2 years in a row they had a medium, and I can't remember her name. She was like the Long Island medium. She blew us all away. And we have, you know, a lot of our private detectives were former federal agents with long careers. Mm-hmm. Skeptical people. We are skeptical people. We require evidence. Right. We don't take things at face value. We want to show me that this works. Prove it. Prove it to me. I need to see it work. And we were all blown away by what this medium could do. She was walking around telling everybody personal information and things no one could possibly know, which led me into, you know, the spiritualist tradition. And so private detectives, consequently investigators, need to be open-minded. So private detectives are actually very open-minded out of necessity, right? Because you can't be closed-minded as an investigator. It's a contradiction for your profession to be that way.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, so we have fun with such people, but they're coming here to develop their talents. Mm. And it's ironic because I can't still talk about it very much. At least some inroads are being made. Mm. And I'm so glad you as a medical doctor, Lana, are doing this, because if you want to change it, as I say, you have to start from within.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The organization, if you will. I have to start from within here too, but... Mm-hmm. Starting from within the organization. So I'm really glad. And then you also, are you still doing any private detective work, David?
Yes, so they call it a private inquiry agent in Australia, and I'm working on my head.
Private inquiry agent. Oh, that's cute, a PIA?
the requirements here are actually tougher here. They're the laws and the training, and it's taken me a lot longer. I actually have my government investigation certification here, but the bureaucracy is comparable, if not. Yeah. But that's okay. You know, I mean, you work within the system, and they have their reasons. So I'm not going to go into that.
Well, bless you both for doing what you're doing within the systems. That's great.
Well, I guess, with my patients, when I deal mainly with emotional health, but I see lots of your ordinary run-of-the-mill cases, but I do, and I'm getting more and more patients that have got unusual symptoms where, you cannot dismiss the, element of perhaps of other elements that we're not taught about, right. And you become more and more aware of this. And I also am doing more and more hypnosis, and I'm developing a therapy where I'm doing a therapy under either hypnosis or just under a relaxed state where people can perhaps break through some of their defenses a bit more because, just talking therapy. You know, even when you get to know your therapist, still, it's very much in the waking state. Our defenses are still very much there, which is, of course, why Freud wanted people to lie on the couch, because when you're relaxed lying on the couch, you're less likely to defend against these things. Yeah. And, when it's closed, they can access, and I will guide them into various places and ask them to perhaps tell me what they see. And, often we'll use symbols or colors or sensations, right. Access to the inner world, but you can actually move therapeutically. You can sometimes move someone more easily, more successfully. They can evolve more in that way. So I guess that's where I'm opening up a bit more as well.
I think work can be done a lot quicker on the subconscious level. We're both hypnotists. I'm a board certified hypnotist and a past life regressionist. So Lana and I work together on these things, and we do experiments. Yeah. And
although a lot of the time when I'm doing this work with people, they're not snoring, and they're still actually talking to me.
Well, let me ask you, have you ever used hemisync to help your patient get into a deep state? Have you ever tried the hemisync?
I've purchased the hemisync.
I must actually purchase it. I was familiar with it to help with meditation. Mm. I was familiar with the fact that it can actually develop other states. So I definitely will look into it, definitely. We've got about 1 to 2 minutes left of the interview. Can I ask you, in the future, what are the future directions of the Monroe Institute? Is there anything that you'd like to, any other exciting, you know, directions?
Right. Well, we continue to look into the effects of audio technology, and I think eventually some other technologies also on getting into these various states of consciousness. I would love to see us on every continent as a Monroe Center, you know, the Monroe Center on each continent. So I see that happening downstream.
I'd like to see that as well.
Yeah. And continued programs, a lot more online programs, so more people can have access. Right? And so I see that our education arm, if you will, expanding greatly. Once we get some funding, I see the research expanding. But, you know, research is very, very expensive. So, and we are a 501c3, so we are very open to donations.
Oh, wonderful.
NGO.
Then we can do more and more research of exactly what is going on. Mm-hmm. And even though at one point we were talking about brain waves, and Bob said, well, you know, that's kind of like measuring the smoke to the fire. Because, again, it's not just the brain we're talking about.
Yes.
So that's it. First thing we can go to see what's happening in these states of consciousness.
That's wonderful. Very, very exciting.
It's fascinating.
I'm definitely going to do an online course.
Please do.
Love to visit.
Yes. Better yet, you all should come to Virginia, take a program here, short of our getting it to Australia, which we will do again. When, I don't know, but we will. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. I'm going to try to have a lucid dream tonight, I think. I'll see
what happens. Put that intention in your mind and see what happens.
But, you know, we'll have to book into one of your courses, and it just sounds very interesting. So, look, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate your having me on your show.
Oh, we're honored to have you on our show. Hopefully, maybe we can have Joseph on at some point,
too,
and get his information.
He's a lot of fun. Yes.
Definitely imagine.
Okay, well, thank you.
Really enjoyed the interview.
Okay, and that's all from us today from Universal Soul Love. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
And goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Thank you, Nancy.